God is the same. Anyway, Jill called this morning, and she's going to her friend's for the weekend, and she'll call me the first thing Monday. I told her what a great, great, great time I had, and she seemed pleased. I'm sure if I hint around, she'll see that I get to try pot just once. Then I'll immediately go home and forget the whole drug setup. But it's nice to be informed and know what things are really like. Of course, I wouldn't want anyone to know I've really used them. And I guess I'd better go get one of those little fishing tackle-type metal boxes to lock you in with a good padlock. I can't take a chance on anyone reading you, especially not now. In fact, I guess I'd better take you with me, even to the library, to look up something about drugs. Thank goodness for the catalog section. I wouldn't dare ask anyone. Also, if I go now when the library first opens, I'll probably have the whole place to myself. July 14. On the way to the library, I met Bill. He's taking me out tonight. I can't wait to see what happens. It's a completely new world I'm exploring, and you can't even conceive the wide new doors that are opening up before me. I feel like Alice in Wonderland. Maybe Lewis G. Carroll was on drugs, too. July 20. Dear, close, warm, intimate friend, diary. What a fantastic, unbelievable, expanding, thrilling week I've had. It's been like, wow, the greatest thing that has ever happened. Remember I told you I had a date with Bill? Well, he introduced me to torpedoes on Friday and speed on Sunday. They're both like riding shooting stars through the Milky Way, only a million trillion times better. The speed was a little scary at first because Bill had to inject it right into my arm. I remembered how much I hated shots when I was in the hospital. But this is different. Now I can't wait. I positively can't wait to try it again. No wonder it's called speed. I could hardly control myself. In fact, I couldn't have if I had wanted to. And I didn't want to. I danced like I had never dreamed possible for introverted, mousy little me. I felt great. Free. Abandoned. A different, improved, perfected specimen of a different, improved, perfected species. It was wild. It was beautiful. It really was. July 23. Dear Diary, Gramps had a little heart attack last night. Thank goodness it happened just as I was getting ready to go out, and it wasn't really serious. Poor Gran is pretty much beside herself, but she's staying calm on the outside anyway. They haven't bugged me at all since I've been here, and they've been so delighted that I'm having a good time and that I've met a lot of friends that they stay completely out of my way. Dear-hearted square souls. If they only really knew what was happening, their eyebrows would be shocked up into the middle of their heads. Gramps' attack only means that he'll be bedridden for a few weeks, but I'll have to really be careful that I don't cause any extra trouble so that they'll want to send me home. Maybe if I start helping more around the house, they'll even think they need me. I hope nothing happens to Gramps. I love him so much. I know sometime both he and Gran will have to die, but I hope that isn't for a very long, long time yet. It's strange, but I've never thought much about dying till now. I suppose someday even I will have to die. I wonder if there really is a life after death. Oh, I do hope there is. But that isn't the part that really worries me. Actually, I know that our souls will go back up to God. But when I think about our bodies being buried in the dark, cold ground and being eaten by worms and rotting, I can hardly stand the thought. I think I'd rather be cremated. Yes, I would. I definitely would. I'm going to ask Mom and Dad and the kids as soon as I get home to be sure and have me cremated when I die. They will. They're a sweet and wonderful and good family, and I love them. And I'm lucky to have them. I must remember to write to them again this very day. I haven't been too good about writing, and I must, I simply must be better. and I think I'll tell them I want to come home, now, right now. I want to get away from Bill and Jill and all the others. I don't know why I shouldn't use drugs, because they're wild and they're beautiful and they're wonderful. But I know I shouldn't, and I won't. I won't ever again. I hereby solemnly promise that I will, from this very day forward, live so that everyone I know can be proud of me, and so that I can be proud of myself. July 25. Gramps is getting along fine. I've done all the cooking and cleaning and everything so Gran could just stay with him all the time. They really appreciate it, and I appreciate them. 6:30. Jill called and invited me to a party, but I told her I'm committed to my grandparents till things are better. I'm glad I had an excuse for not going. July 28. Mom and Dad have been calling every day since Gramps had his attack. They asked me if I wanted to come home, and I really do, but I feel I should stay here till at least next week and help. August 2. I'm getting bored to the teeth, but at least I'm giving moral support to Gran. And after all she's done for me all my life, that's the least I can do. Bill called again and asked me for a date, and Gran insists that I get out, so I guess I'll go with him. But I'll just babysit if he wants to trip. August 3. Bill had 6 kids over to his house last night. His folks had gone to the city, so they wouldn't be back till 1 or 2. They were all going to trip on acid, and since I'd been cooped up for so long, I decided I might as well take one last trip, too. I'm certainly not going to use any of the stuff when I get home. It was groovy, even greater than the others. I don't see how each trip can be better than the one before, but they are. I sat for hours examining the exoticness and magnificence of my right hand. I could see the muscles and the cells and the pores. Each blood vessel was a fascination unto itself, and my mind still flutters with the wonder of it all. August 6. Well, last night it happened. I am no longer a virgin. In a way, I'm really sorry, because I always wanted Roger to be the first and only boy in my life. But he's away visiting. In fact, I haven't seen him since I got here. He might have grown into a gawky, stupid, rambling idiot anyhow. I wonder if sex without acid could be so exciting, so wonderful, so indescribable. I always thought it just took a minute, or that it would be like dogs mating. But it wasn't like that at all. Actually, last night it took me a long time to get started on the trip. I just sat in the corner feeling left out and sort of antagonistic. Then suddenly it happened, and I wanted to dance wildly and make love. I hadn't known that I even felt that way about Bill. He had seemed a nice, quiet person who took care of me when I needed support, but suddenly I didn't have any inhibitions about trying to seduce him. Not that he needed much pressure. Actually, it still doesn't seem quite real. All my life I've thought that the first time I had sex with someone it would be something special, and maybe even painful. But it turned out to be just part of the brilliant, freaky, way-out, forever pattern. I still can't quite separate one thing from another. I wonder if all the kids had sex. But no, that's just too awfully animal and indecent. I wonder how shocked Roger would be if he knew. And my parents, and Tim, and Alex, and Gramps, and Gran. I think they would be mortified. But no more than I am. Maybe I even really love Bill. But right now I can hardly even remember what he looks like. Oh, I'm so horribly, nauseously mixed up. And what if I'm pregnant? Oh, how I wish I had someone, anyone, to talk with, who knows what they're talking about. I hadn't thought about being pregnant before. Can it happen the first time? Will Bill marry me if I am? Or will he just think I'm an easy little dum-dum who makes it with everyone? Of course he won't marry me. He's only 15 years old. I guess I'll just have to have an abortion or something. I certainly couldn't stand it if I had to leave school like Blank did last year. The kids talked about absolutely nothing else for weeks. Oh, God, please, please make me not pregnant. I'm going to call Mom right now. I'll get Gran to buy a plane ticket, and I'm going home tomorrow. I hate this rotten place, and I hate Bill Thompson and all that crowd. I don't know how I ever got mixed up with them, but I was so pleased and felt so smart when they accepted me. And now I feel miserable and ashamed, as though that's going to do any good. August 7. Mom and Dad think I should wait until next week to come home. I couldn't really argue because Gran needs me. But in the meantime, I'm not going to answer the phone or step off our property. Later. Jill called, but I told Gran to tell her I wasn't feeling well. It's pretty obvious, even to Gran, that I'm really not. I'm living with doubts and apprehensions and fears that I never dreamed possible. August 9. The world has actually stopped in its orbit. My life is completely over. After dinner, when Gran and I were sitting out in the garden, we heard tappings at the back gate, and guess who, of all the people in the universe, stopped by? Roger and his mom and dad. They got back in the afternoon and heard about Gramp's sickness and had dropped by to visit him. I was beside myself. Roger is even more breathtakingly good-looking than ever, and I wanted to throw myself in his arms and cry my heart out to him. Instead, we shook hands, and I hurried to get everybody something to drink. Later, after we'd all talked for a while, Gran sent me in to get some chips and dip, and Roger followed me. Can you imagine Roger following me? He even asked me out. I wanted to die right then and there. And later, when we were out in the garden, he started telling me about how he was going to military school for the next year and a half till he was ready for college. He even said he was a little frightened and lonely about going away by himself for the first time. And he told me how he wanted to become an aeronautical engineer and work on new techniques for air travel. He's got some wonderful ideas. It's almost like reading Jules Verne. And he has so many plans for his life, with the army and all. Then he kissed me. And it was what I had always dreamed it would be since I was in kindergarten. Other boys have kissed me, but it wasn't the same at all. This was fondness and liking and desire and regard and admiration and affection and tenderness and attachment and yearning. It was the most wonderful thing that has ever happened in my life. But now I'm sitting here and I feel sick to my stomach. What if he finds out about what I've been doing since I got here? How could he ever forgive me? How could he ever understand? Would he? If I were only a Catholic, maybe I could do some kind of terrible penance to pay for my transgressions. I was brought up to believe that God would forgive people's sins. But how can I forgive myself? How could Roger forgive me? Oh, terrors, horrors, endless torment. August 10. Roger has called 4 times today, but I refused to talk to him. Gran and Gramps want me to stay over a few days until I feel better, but I can't. I simply can't face Roger again until I get my thinking straightened out. Oh, how did I ever get mixed up in such a mess? Imagine losing my virginity 4 nights before seeing Roger again. The awful irony of it. But even without that, would he have understood the acid trips? Would he have wanted me after those? I hadn't really cared before, but I care now. And it's too late. I must talk to someone. I must find someone who understands about drugs and talk to them. I wonder if I could talk to someone at Dad's university. Oh, no, they'd be bound to tell him, and then I'd really be in a mess. Maybe I could say I was doing a paper on drugs for a science project or something. But I can't do that until school starts. I think I'd better take some of Gramps' sleeping pills. I'm never going to be able to sleep without them. In fact, I think I'd better take a supply of them. He's got plenty, and I'm sure I'll have a few bad nights at home before I get straightened out. Oh, I hope it's just a few. August 13. It's all I can do to keep from crying. Mom and Dad just called to say how proud they are to have me for a daughter. There are no words to express how I feel. August 14. Gran took me to the plane. She thinks Roger and I had a quarrel. She kept telling me everything would be all right, and that it's a woman's place to be long-suffering and patient and tolerant and understanding. Oh, if she only knew. Mom and Dad and Tim and Alex met me and all told me how pale and wan I looked. They were ever so gentle and loving. It's good to be home. I must forget about everything. I must repent and forgive myself and start over. After all, I just turned 15, and I can't stop life and get off. Besides, since I've thought about Gramps dying, I don't want to die. I'm afraid. Isn't that ghastly and ironic? I'm afraid to live and afraid to die, just like the old Negro spiritual. I wonder what their hang-up was. August 16. Mother is making me eat. She's fixing all my favorite foods, but they still don't taste like much. Roger wrote me a long letter asking me if I was all right, but I simply haven't the energy or the strength or the desire to answer him. Everyone's terribly worried about me, and in fact, I'm even terribly worried about myself. I still don't know if I'm pregnant, and won't know for another 10 or 12 days. Oh, I pray I'm not. I keep asking myself how I could have been such an idiot. And there's no answer other than the fact that I am an idiot. A stupid, bungling, senseless, foolish, ignorant idiot. August 17. I've used the last of Gramps' sleeping pills, and I'm a wreck. I can't sleep, and I'm all screwed up, and Mom is insisting that I go see Dr. Langley. Maybe that will help. I'll do anything. August 18. I went to see Dr. Langley this morning, and I really laid it on about my not being able to sleep. He asked me a lot of questions about why I couldn't sleep, but I just kept repeating, I didn't know, I didn't know, I didn't know. Finally, he broke down and gave me the pills. Actually, I don't need the sleep as much as I need the escape. It's a wonderful way to escape. I think I can't stand it, and then I just take a pill and wait for sweet nothingness to take over. At this stage in my life, nothingness is a lot better than somethingness. August 20. I don't think the sleeping pills Dr. Langley gave me are as strong as the ones Gramps had, because I have to take two of these, and sometimes even three. Maybe it's because I'm so nervous. Anyway, I don't know how much longer I can last. If something doesn't happen soon, I think I'm going to blow my brains out. August 22. I had Mom call Dr. Langley, and I'm going to ask him for some tranquilizers. I can't sleep all day long, and I certainly can't walk around like this, so I hope he gives them to me. He's got to. August 23. Tranquilizers are the greatest. This afternoon I took one, just before the mailman's arrival, with another letter from Roger. Instead of getting all upset, I sat down and poured my whole soul out to him. Nothing, of course, about my acid trips or the speed, and surely not about Bill and my possible condition, but just about the important things that concern us both. I've even begun to wonder if maybe I could turn Roger on just once, so he would understand. Could I? Could I make him take his first trip unknowingly as I did? Oh, I wish I dared. It seems like I've been held down for so long. Maybe it's the sleeping pills and the tranquilizers, but there are moments when I'd really like to just burst loose. But I guess those days are gone forever. I'm really confused. I wish I had someone to talk to. August 26th. What a wonderful, beautiful, happy day. My period started. I was never so happy for anything in my life. Now I can throw away my sleeping pills and tranquilizers. I can be me again. Oh, wow. September 6th. Beth came back from camp, but she's hardly the same person, and she met some Jewish jerk that she's going steady with. They're going to be together all the time, day and night. Perhaps I'm a little jealous because Roger lives so far away, and school has started, and Alex and her noisy little friends are driving me crazy, and Mom has begun to get on my back, too. Today I went down to this great little boutique and found a cute pair of moccasins and a vest with fringe and a really great pair of pants. Chris, the girl who works there, showed me how to iron my hair, which I did tonight, and now it's perfectly straight. It's the greatest. The greatest, except that Mom couldn't stand it. I went downstairs to show her, and she said I looked like a hippie, and that she and Dad and I must have a little talk some evening. I could tell them a thing or two, because I imagine that sex without drugs isn't even the same thing as the mad, forever wonder of it when you're really way out there. Anyway, I seem to be doing less and less right. I'm getting so that no matter what I do, I can't please the establishment. September 7. Last night was the bitter end. Mom and Dad flowed tears and flowers about how much they love me and how worried they've been about my attitude since I got back from Grand's. They hate my hair, which they still want me to wear in a flip like the kiddies. And they talked and talked and talked. But never once did they even hear one thing I was trying to say to them. In fact, at the beginning, when they were telling me about their deep concern, I had the overwhelming desire to break down and tell them everything. I wanted to tell them. I wanted more than anything in the world to know that they understood. But naturally, they just kept on talking and talking, because they're incapable of really understanding anything. If only parents would listen. If only they would let us talk, instead of forever and eternally and continuously harping and preaching and nagging and correcting and yakking, yakking, yakking. But they won't listen. They simply won't or can't or don't want to listen. And we kids keep winding up back in the same old frustrating, lost, lonely corner with no one to relate to, either verbally or physically. However, I'm lucky I have Roger. If I really have him. September 9. Another sock in the belly day. Roger is definitely going to that military school, and the first time he'll be home is Christmas. And maybe not even then. His dad went there, and his grandfather did too, so I guess he's almost obligated to go. But I need him here, not there in that idiot school marching around for a whole year. Now we'll be a whole continent away. I wrote him a 10-page letter telling him I'll wait for him, even though in his last letter he told me that he expected me to date and have fun. But how can I have fun in this hole? September 10. I was so depressed about Roger that I walked down to look at clothes in the boutique where Chris works. It was almost her coffee break, so we went next door to have a Coke, and I told her how low I was because of Roger. She immediately understood. It was great to have someone again that I could talk to. When we got back to the store, she gave me a little red candy-type thing and told me to go home, take it, and listen to some groovy music. She said, "This heart will pep you up like tranquilizers slow you down." And you know she was right. I've been using too many sleeping pills and too many tranquilizers. I don't know why that dumb doctor didn't give me something to make me feel better instead of something to make me feel worse. I've been feeling great all afternoon, feeling like living again. I've washed my hair and cleaned my room and ironed and done all the things that Mom has been nagging me to do for days. The only problem is that now it's night and I can't seem to turn the energy off. I'd stay up and write to Roger, but I just wrote him a giant letter yesterday and he'd think I was some kind of nut. I guess I'll just have to waste one of my good sleeping pills to stop it. That's life. See ya. September 12th. Dad and Mom are constantly harping about the way I look. They keep saying that they know I'm a good, sweet girl, but I'm beginning to act like a hippie, and they're afraid the wrong kind of people will be drawn to me. What it amounts to is they are so ultra-conservative that they don't even know what's happening. Chris and I talk a lot about our parents and the establishment. Her dad is an executive with a breakfast food company, and he travels a lot, often in the company of other women, she confided to me. And her mom is such a devoted club and civic-minded woman that the whole town would probably fall flat on its face if she took an evening off to listen to her daughter. Mom's the pillar of society in this town, Chris told me. She holds up everybody and everything but me. And man, have I been let down. Chris doesn't need to work, but she just simply can't stand it around her house. I told her I was beginning to feel the same way, and she's going to try and get me a job with her. Isn't that the greatest? September 13. Wow, I'm really living. I have a job. Chris asked her boss last night, and he said yes. Isn't that the greatest? I'll be working with Chris on Thursday nights and on Friday nights and all day Saturday, and I'll be able to buy anything my non-conforming little heart desires. Chris is a year older than I am, and she's a year ahead in school, but she really is a great girl, and I love her and relate better to her than I ever have with anyone in my life, even Beth. I suspect she knows a little about drugs, because she's given me hearts a couple of times when I've been really low. Someday soon I've really got to talk to her about these things. September 21. Dear Friend Diary. I'm sorry I've been neglecting you, but I really have been busy with my new job and school starting and all, and you still are my very dearest friend and closest confidant, even though I'm really tuned in and receive well with Chris. We never get tired, and she and I are two of the most popular girls at school. I know I look great. I'm still down at 103 pounds, and every time I get hungry or tired, I just pop a Benny. We've got energy and vitality to spare, and clothes like man. My hair is the greatest. I wash it in mayonnaise, and it's shining and soft enough to make anyone turn on. I still haven't met a guy I really dig, but that's probably all right, because I'm waiting for Roger. September 23. Diary. My parents are absolutely and positively going to make me blow my mind. I have to take Dexys to stay high at school and at work and on dates and to do my homework. Then I have to take tranquilizers to bear up at home. Daddy thinks I'm blowing his image as the college dean. He even yelled at me at the table last night for saying, "man." He has his words when he wants to stress a point, and that's all right, but let me say "man," and you'd think I had committed the unpardonable sin. Chris and I are about ready to cut out. She has a friend in San Francisco who can help us get a job. And since we've both had experience in a boutique, it shouldn't be that hard. Besides, her parents are about ready for a divorce. They do nothing but fight when they're together, and she's had it. At least I don't have to put up with that. Also, Roger says he's too busy to write much, which is an unlikely story. Like Chris says, A man's blood soon runs cold when there's no one around to warm it up. September 26. Last night was the night, friend. I finally smoked pot, and it was even greater than I expected. Last night after work, Chris fixed me up with a college friend of hers who knew I'd been on acid, etc., but who wanted to turn me on to hash. He told me not to expect to feel like I felt with liquor, and I told him I'd never had more than champagne at birthday parties and leftovers from cocktail parties. We all got hilarious over that, and Ted, Chris's date, said that lots of kids never try booze, not only because it's their parents' thing, but because it's a lot harder to get than pot. Ted said that when he first started experimenting, he found he could steal a lot of money from his parents, and they would never miss it. But let him take one swig out of any of their booze bottles, and it was as though they had it measured to the ounce. Then Richie showed me how to smoke, and I've never even had a cigarette. He gave me a small orientation lecture, like I should listen for small things I wouldn't ordinarily hear and just relax. At first I took too deep a drag and almost choked to death, so Richie told me to suck in open-mouthed gulps to mix as much air in as possible. But that didn't work too well either, and after a while Ted gave up and brought out a hookah pipe. It seemed funny and exotic, but at first I couldn't get any smoke, and I felt cheated because the other three were obviously stoned. But finally it started to work, just when I thought it never would, and I really began to feel happy and free as a bright canary chirping through the open, endless heavens. And I was so relaxed. I don't think I've been that relaxed in my whole entire life. It was really beautiful. Later, Rich brought a sheepskin rug out of his room, and we began walking through the thickness of it, and there was a sensation in my feet that was totally indescribable, a softness that enveloped my complete body. And quite suddenly I could hear the strange, almost silent sound of the long silky hairs rubbing against each other and against my feet. It was a sound unsimilar to any I have ever heard, and I remember trying desperately to give her dissertation upon the phenomena of each individual hair having perfect pitch within itself. But of course I couldn't. It was too perfect. Then I picked up a salted peanut and noticed that nothing had ever tasted so salty before. It felt like being a child again and trying to swim in the Great Salt Lake. Only the peanut was even saltier. My liver and my spleen and my intestines were corroded with salt. I longed to taste a fresh peach or strawberry and have the flavor and sweetness and delectableness of them consume me also. It was great, and I began to laugh in a totally mad way. I was delighted that I was so different. Everyone in the whole universe was mad, except me. I was the only sane and perfect being. Somewhere in my brain, I remembered reading that 1,000 years with man is as a day with the Lord, and I had found the answer. I was even now in my new time length, living the lives of 1,000 men in the space of hours. Later, we were all very thirsty and dying for something sweet, so we walked to the ice cream shop, joking about the incredible high curbs and the unbelievable, oddly shaped moon which kept changing shapes and colors. I don't know if we were all really as high as we said we were, but it was fun. And in the restaurant, we joked and laughed as though the whole world and its secrets belonged to us alone. When Richie brought me home about midnight, my parents, who were both up, were very pleased with the nice, young, clean-cut, gentlemanly young man I was going out with. They didn't even complain about what time it was. Can you believe it? P.S. Richie gave me some joints to smoke when I'm alone and I want to be in heaven. Isn't that nice, nice, nice? October 5. Chris and I are thinking about quitting our jobs because it's getting so that we don't have any time for what we want to do. I'm deeply in love with Richie, and Chris is in love with Ted, and we want to spend as much time with them as we can. The bitch is that none of us ever seem to have enough money. So Chris and I have both had to push a little pot. Of course, we only sell to the kids who are heavy users and who would just buy it from someone else if they didn't get it from us. Ted and Richie are in college, and they have to work a lot harder than we do in high school, so they don't have the time to sell. And besides, it's a lot easier for guys to get busted than for girls. At first it was pretty hard to keep my cool around the establishment. But since I'm now Richie's chick all the way, I have to do what I can to help him. October 8. I convinced Rich that it would be easier to push acid than pot. At least we can put it on penny stamps or gum or lifesavers and carry them around with us without having the fuzz breathing down our necks, or without having some idiot fink find out where or what our bag is. Richie is so good, good, good to me, and sex with him is like lightning and rainbows and springtime. I may be just chipping around with drugs, but I'm really hooked on that boy. We would do absolutely anything for each other. He's going into medicine, and I've got to help him any way I can. It's going to be a long, hard pull, but we'll make it. Imagine 8 or 10 more years of school for him, and he's already in his second year of college. Mom and Dad think he's still in high school. I think I won't go on to college. Dad will just curl up and die, but it's more important for me to work and help Rich. As soon as I'm out of high school, I'll get a full-time job, and we'll settle down. He's been a straight-A student, but he says he's slipping a little. I really love that man. Oh, I really, truly do. I can't wait to get to him. He teases me and says I'm oversexed because I've been bugging him to let me try sex without being stoned first. He's promised me he will. It will be almost like a new experience. I can hardly wait. Date unknown. Richie and I never go anywhere. It's almost a ritual for him to pick me up and spend a few minutes with my parents, and then rush over to the apartment he shares with Ted. I really wish we could be together stoned every night, but he only lets me come over when he restocks my acid supply and gives me enough grass and barbs to last me until I see him again. I know he's studying very hard, so I try to content myself with what he can give me of himself, which seems to be getting less and less. Maybe I am oversexed. At least I seem to be a lot more interested in it than he is. But that's only because he worries so about me. I wish he'd let me take the pill, and I wish he didn't have to work and study so hard. Oh, well. What I've got is so great, I don't know how I could even wish for anything more. October 17. Today I went to the grade school again. I don't mind pushing at high school because the stuff is sometimes kind of hard to get, and the kids usually come up and ask me for it. Chris and I just supply it from Richie. He can get whatever is their bag, barbs or pot or amphetamines or LSD or DMT or meth or anything. The high school kids are one thing, and even the junior high. But today I sold 10 stamps of LSD to a little kid at the grade school who wasn't even 9 years old, I'm sure. I know that he in turn must be pushing, and these kids are just too young. The thought of 9- and 10-year-olds getting wasted is so repulsive that I'm not going over there anymore. I know if they want it, they'll get it somewhere, but they won't get it from me. I've been lying here on my bed ever since I got home from school thinking about it. And I've decided that Richie must come over and see Dad about a scholarship. Surely with his grades and background, something could be worked out. I'm sure it could. October 18. If there were medals and prizes for stupidity and gullibleness, I certainly would receive the half-assed one. Chris and I walked into Richie and Ted's apartment to find the bastards stoned and making love to each other. No wonder Richie Bitchy wanted so little to do with me. Here I am, out peddling drugs for a low-class queer whose dad probably isn't sick at all. I wonder how many other dumb chicks he's got working for him. Oh, I'm so ashamed. I can't believe I've sold to 11 and 12-year-olds, and even 9 and 10-year-olds. What a disgrace I am to myself and my family, and to everybody. I'm as bad as that son of a bitch, Richie. October 19. Chris and I sat around the park all day thinking things over. She's been using drugs for over a year, and I've been on since July 10, to be exact. We've decided it would be impossible to change while we're here, so we're going to cut out and go to San Francisco. And I've simply got to turn Richie into the police. I'm not being vindictive or spiteful or jealous. Really, I'm not. It's just that I've got to do something to protect all those grade and junior high school kids. All this crap Richie sold me about, they'll get it someplace, and all that is just a bunch of high-pressure bullshit. He doesn't care about anyone in this whole world but himself. And the only way I can make retribution for what I've done is to at least keep him from getting more kids started. That's one of the worst things about this drug business. Practically every kid that uses also sells. And it's just a giant round-robin thing that keeps on getting bigger and bigger until I wonder where it will ever end. I really do. I wish I'd never gotten started. And now Chris and I have both pledged to each other that we're going to stay clean. We really and truly are. We've given our sacred oath and promise. In San Francisco, we won't know a single soul that uses it, and it will be easy to stay off. Date unknown. It's very sad sneaking off in the middle of the night, but Chris and I could think of no other way. The bus will be leaving at 4:30 a.m., and we must be on it. First, we'll go to Salt Lake City for a while, and then backtrack to San Francisco. I'm really quite afraid of what Richie might do if he caught me. He will almost surely know the one who turned him in, because I told the police in my letter about the few places I know where he stashes his supply. I wish all dealers could be put away. Goodbye, dear home. Goodbye, good family. I really am leaving mostly because I love you so much, and I don't want you to ever know what a weak and disreputable person I've been. And I hate being a high school dropout, but I dare not even write for my transcripts, knowing you and Richie might follow them. I'm leaving you a note, beloved family, but it can never tell you how sacred you are to me. October 26. We're in San Francisco, in a dirty-smelling and stifling little one-room apartment. We're both filthy after so many miserable hours on the bus, and since Chris is taking her bath down the hall, I'll write a few lines till it's my turn. I'm sure we have enough money to last us till we get jobs, because I kept the $130 I was supposed to turn in to Bastard Richie. And Chris was able to draw out the $400+ she had in the bank. This whoring little spider hole we're in cost $90 for the month. But at least that will give us enough time to get jobs and look for a decent place to live. I feel dreadful about my parents. But at least they know I'm with Chris. And they think she's a nice and respectable girl who won't lead me astray. Boy. How much further astray could I go? October 27. Chris and I have looked all day for jobs. We've followed up every ad in the paper, but we're either too young or too inexperienced, or we don't have references, or they want someone with a following, or they'll call us. I have never been so damned exhausted in my life. We certainly won't need anything to make us sleep tonight, even on the lumpy, soggy, let-down contraption which is called a bed in this cracker box. October 28. Everything always feels clammy and damp here. There's even a green type of fungus mold growing in the closet. But thank goodness we won't be here long. At least I hope we won't be here long. But today was no more successful than yesterday in job hunting. We couldn't locate Chris's friend, either. October 29. I took a job in some crappy little lingerie store. It doesn't pay much, but at least it will keep us in groceries, etc. Chris will keep looking for a better job, and after she gets one, then I'll quit and look for something a little more challenging. Chris hopes that maybe in a year we can open our own boutique. Wouldn't that be wonderful? And maybe when we're very successful, we can invite our families to come and see us and glory in our success. October 31. Chris still doesn't have a job. She looks every day, but we both decided that she wouldn't take just anything. It has to be in a first-rate store where she can learn everything we'll need to know to run our own place. Every night I'm so tired I can hardly make it to bed. I didn't realize that standing up all day waiting on grouchy, lousy people would be so exhausting. November 1. Chris and I spent the day touring Chinatown and Golden Gate Park, and we took a bus across the bridge. It's a wonderful and exciting and beautiful city, but I really wish I were home. Of course, I couldn't tell Chris that. November 3. Chris finally has a job. It's in the greatest little shop I've ever seen. I went down after work and bought a pair of sandals. She can learn everything there is to know about buying and displaying, as well as selling, because there are only two of them in the shop. Sheila is the owner, and she is, without a doubt, the most fabulous-looking woman I have ever seen. Skin as clear and white as snow, and eyelashes as long as my arm. Fake, of course. Her hair is jet black, and I know that she is all of 6 feet tall. I can't understand why she isn't modeling or in movies or on TV. Her shop is in a very exclusive little area, and her prices are high, 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 even with Chris's discount. But anyway, I just felt I had to splurge after all the scrimping we've done, and are going to continue to do. November 5. I'm getting more homesick every day, instead of more weaned away. I wonder how Chris feels. I don't dare say anything, for fear she'll think I'm a big boo, which I probably am. Actually, I think I'd go on home if I weren't so afraid of Richie. I'm sure he'd try to involve me if he could. He's such a weak, conniving, vindictive character. I see so many things about him now that are repulsive that I don't know how I ever got so miserably brainwashed. Guess I was just a stupid, dumb kid asking to be taken. And I was. Man, was I ever. But next time I won't be so stupid. Except there won't be any next time. I will never, ever, ever, under any circumstances, use drugs again. They're the root and cause of this whole rotten, stinking mess I'm in. And I wish with all my heart and soul that I had never heard of them. And I wish letters didn't carry postmarks. Then I could write to Mom and Dad and the kids, and Graham and Gramps, and maybe even Roger. There are so many things I would like to tell them. It's just too bad I didn't realize it in time. November 8. Get up, eat, work, eat, and fall into bed exhausted. I don't even take a bath every day anymore. It's too much trouble to wait around for the bathroom to be empty. November 10. I quit my job, and I'm going to spend my full time looking for a more interesting one. Sheila had a list of places to which I can go and says I can use her name as a reference. P.S. We splurged and got a second-hand TV for $15. It doesn't work too well, but it cheers the place up. November 11. Well, diary, How do you like this? I got a job my very first hour out. In fact, it was the second shop I went to. Mario Milani makes exquisite custom jewelry, much of it filled with precious stones. He wanted someone young and fresh-looking to be kind of window dressing and background for his work. I'm flattered that he chose me. Mr. Milani is big and fat and jolly and tells me he has a wife and 8 children who live in Sausalito, and already he has invited me over some Sunday for dinner and to meet them. November 13. I adore my new job. Mr. Milani is like a second family to me. Here he is in this very exclusive little shop in the lobby of an incredibly expensive hotel. Yet he brings his lunch every day in a paper sack and shares it with me. He says it keeps him from getting too fat. And Chris and I are going out to his home on Sunday. Isn't that great? It will be really wonderful to see a bunch of little kids again. He has one son, Roberto, just Tim's age, and another little boy only 3 days younger than Alexandria. He thinks I